Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Wednesday, July 25th. A very warm day here in Dallas, Texas. I think we're gonna get to 100, but we're not gonna go over 100. That's what the weather reports are telling us. So that's kind of a step in the right direction, if I could put it that way. Today we're going to be chatting with our good friend George Rodriguez. I'm sure he'll give us a weather report from beautiful San Antonio. We have two main topics today we want to get into with George. The first one is security clearances, and there's been a story here for the last 48 hours or so about security clearances, and I have a post over at the American Thinker this morning about this, where I make the case that the security clearance is for people who are working in the administration. I really do not understand why anybody who is not working in the administration would have a security clearance. Now, there may be a special reason, but when you become a partisan like John Brennan, I don't know how you can justify having one. So we'll talk a little bit about that. Maybe George can relate some stories of his days on the Reagan and Bush administration about security clearances. There's also been a lot of news about fundraising in Texas. The Democrats are apparently doing a good job of fundraising in some competitive House races. And even though there's no indication they're going to win any of those races, they're clearly getting a lot of publicity for raising so much money. Clearly, Representative O'Rourke, also known as Beto, is raising a lot of money. So we'll talk about him as well. A quick note on this day in history. On this day in 1915, Joseph P. Kennedy Jr. was born. He was President Kennedy's older brother, who was killed in World War II in 1944. So Joseph P. Kennedy, the man that I think his father was grooming to run for president, he was killed in a very, very sensitive mission in Germany, over Germany, on this, not on this day, but in 1944. Let me say hello to George Rodriguez. And George, how's the weather in San Antonio?
Well, it's nice and toasty. It isn't as bad as it has been in the past couple of days. We're only at 100 today. So, you know, that's like a cold wave for us right now.
Yeah, right. Well, I'm going to check our temperature right now. Our temperature right now is 101. So I guess I misspoke. It did go over 100. It's 101 right now here in beautiful North Texas. So I guess we're not too far from each other as far as the temperatures.
Yeah, it's what's been interesting is to hear the reaction from some of the some of our liberal friends who are, you know, who are very, very quick to yell that this is climate change. But, you know, it seems to me like summers are always hot in South Texas anyway. So I'm not sure exactly what climate they're talking about that has changed.
Right. Well, it would be interesting, it would be interesting to go back and maybe read some of the letters and some of the articles, let's say, that were written by your father or people in that time frame, because and everything that I have ever read about Texas summers, I mean, this is really not that unusual Texas summers have always been.
Exactly. I mean, there's the very famous statement by who was it? Somebody in the 18th in the 19th century that said that they would rent out hell and live in Texas. I mean, it just is, you know, this is, I mean, it's hot and humid, and, you know, that's the way that it's summer is in Texas, and that's all there is to it.
That's the way it is. Now, of course, it's more humid in certain regions, like in Houston and maybe San Antonio.
Right. Exactly.
Whereas up here it's not quite as humid, but just as warm. Now, one thing that I was talking one time to an old timer who has passed away by now, but gentleman who died, lived into his 90s. So he almost, you know, he grew up a lot of his young adult life would have been, let's say, in the early part of the 20th century. And what he said to me was that back then, the biggest difference back then is that you didn't have air conditioning, so you were your homes and everything were built a little different. You know, the windows were placed in certain places, so there'd be a lot more breeze. So I guess people got used to it. They certainly they loved having trees around them for the purposes of shade. So now, of course, we have air conditioning, which allows us a few luxuries that they didn't have back then. But I don't think much has changed. I think you're right. I don't think much has changed in terms of the actual temperatures. I don't buy the climate change reasoning for why our summers are the way they are. I think they've always been, you know, they've always been that way.
Well, classic, you know, very, very interesting on that point is that, you know, when they do talk that the summers have gotten hotter, they have they talk about how it has increased by 3 or 4 degrees. Now, 3 or 4 degrees, you know, when you're sitting at 107 versus when you're sitting at 100, I'm sorry, it just doesn't really matter.
No, it really doesn't. And we had that last week. One day was 107. One day was 104.
Yeah.
Can somebody explain the difference? I mean, really, technically different, I guess, but
it's
not really
hot.
Not really any
it
different.
Is hot.
Yeah, it really is. Well, George, let me pick your brain a little bit. Talk a little bit about security clearances. I have a story that I wanted to share with you. If you remember when President Nixon left the presidency, you know, he took the helicopter and then he went to Andrews and then took Air Force One. At some point during the flight, the plane was no longer Air Force One. In other words, as soon as President Ford was sworn in, the pilot of the plane immediately communicated that this is no longer Air Force One. This is now, you know, military plane number whatever, whatever. But it was no longer Air Force One because the president was no longer on board the plane. And I was always under the impression, based on that example, that the minute you walked away from office, you would lose whatever sensitive clearances you had. Apparently, it isn't that way. You have John Brennan, Mr. Clapper, and a couple of others who still have clearances. Now, maybe that was on purpose. I don't know. Maybe they were given those clearances on purpose in case they had to be consulted at any point in time. But the way John Brennan is behaving, I wouldn't want to consult him anyway, George. And so, you know, what is your experience? I mean, you were in a couple of administrations. What was your experience with security clearances?
Well, the three experiences that I have had were when the three administrations that I have worked with, or the three that I have worked in, and while they were basically the same party, when an administration changes, when the personnel changes, the clearances are revoked. Now, we need to understand that there are clearances to access classified information. There are clearances to enter restricted areas, and there are clearances to actually do background checks. And all of those clearances, you know, vary. My experience has been, for example, the first one that I participated in was when we were part of the transition team for the Reagan administration, that we had to collect, literally, we had to collect the clearance badges and clearance and anything that we didn't have computers at that point, because this is 1981. Anything of a sensitive nature that the, you know, any files of a sensitive nature that the Carter folks were leaving behind, we had to literally make sure that, you know, go in and a list was provided by the Secret Service of the folks that had been given clearances, and we had to be sure that we collected all of their badges. It surprised the heck out of me when I read the other day, just like you, that somebody like Susan Rice had kept hers. It made me wonder what the heck was going on. And I checked with a friend of mine who worked with the FBI at the Bush White House, at the George W. Bush White House. And he was telling me that a lot of this is now the result of 9/11, that because there was a fear of some type of catastrophic attack, that in many cases people were allowed to keep some clearances in order to avoid any type of break in communication or anything of the nature. However, the politicalization that has gone on of security information, not to mention the word that's being used now, monetizing, which means that you're making money off of pretending to have access, because that's what it is at this point, pretending or having had access to security information or a security position. That has really, really, in my opinion, jeopardized a lot of sensitive information. I mean, these are the same folks, Susan Rice, Clapper, et cetera, et cetera. These are the same folks that sent a plane load of money to Iran. These are the same folks who, if you recall, Obama whispering in the ear of Medved, that everything was going to be fine. He had more flexibility as soon as the
right.
The next. Those things don't look like people that should have security. They just don't appear that.
No,
way.
It really doesn't. And I think in the case of John Brennan in particular, I have to confess that Susan Rice, I have not heard much from of a partisan nature. I mean, maybe. She's had something, but not too much. She's not on TV every night blasting Trump like Brennan is. Brennan is not just on TV. He is in the most hysterical network in the country,
yeah.
Which is MSNBC.
Maybe
I mean, so he's like,
comments.
Yeah, I mean, he's
off the chart, man.
He's off the charts. I don't know how in the world he even has one. But the explanation you gave us of 9/11 makes a lot of sense, because if you all of a sudden had to put together a team out of an emergency, it would be nice to have at least some people with experience who could come in,
right.
And be so. And that makes sense. I can see that. I can see that explanation. I can see that making sense. But in the case of Brennan, though, and maybe Clapper to some extent, but Brennan in particular, I think he has not earned the right to have one of those. I mean, when I heard that he had a clearance, I said to myself, you got to be kidding me. Got to be kidding me. How does this guy, I mean, this would be the equivalent of the most anti-Obama critic. I mean, this would be the equivalent of, let's say Rush Limbaugh or Sean Hannity having a clearance, let's say during the Obama administration or
yeah,
something like that.
Hold on to your hat on this one. Hold on to your hat, because the other thing that I found out was that apparently in the closing days of the Obama administration, an executive order called 13526, Executive Order 13526, was signed, which modified the rules and gave James Clapper specifically gave him authority to access classified information. And that within itself, in my opinion, is shocking that that wasn't dealt with early on. And one of the things that any new incoming administration needs to do immediately is review and cancel executive orders that are of a sensitive or are of any kind of outrageous, in my opinion, that's the word that I'll use, nature. And this is definitely one of them. This is definitely one of them, that he would be given such authority in the closing days of the Obama administration. I mean, that to me, really smells.
Well, it also perhaps shows that President Trump maybe didn't have his feet on the ground completely, because that's the kind of information that an experienced Washingtonian would say to President Trump, look, you got to do this, you got to do this, you got to do this. I mean, you don't expect the president to come in. I don't care who he is, really. And
president to come in.
No,
sure.
I know. And so this is why you come in and you have to have some people around you who kind of know how it works. And maybe that's this is an example of President Trump not knowing and maybe not being surrounded with some of the best people that maybe he should have been at the time. But I came to the conclusion in my American Thinker post, I came to the conclusion that it's really up to the president, as far as I'm concerned, on something like this. And it should be, I leave it up to the president, and I say, look, you do this as you see fit, as you see fit in your administration. But don't have too many. be very picky as to who gets a clearance. Because, I mean, look, you don't know what Brennan has fed to newspapers from all
that's
that
exactly
stuff
right.
that he gets. That's the part that bugs me more than anything else.
Yeah,
all those
that's
leaks.
Exactly
remember
right.
all those leaks?
Well, that's exactly right. And there have been some very, interesting people, noteworthy people, that who have had clearances revoked, such as Robert Oppenheimer. I was, the mastermind, mastermind of the atomic bomb. I mean, I thought that, I found that one to be very, very interesting. But you're right. I mean, this is something that in the past, the revocations have occurred mostly because of security questions. In this case, it's not only security, but it's the outrageous politicalization,
right.
the behavior of these people. I mean, Clapper is, like we said, he's off base. He is not only off base; he's off reservation on this one.
Yeah, well, especially Brennan. I have to tell you, Brennan is the one that I wouldn't think twice about it, because I don't, whatever experience he has. Whatever information he has in a moment of need,
that's exactly right.
I'd rather get it from somebody else, because I don't think you can trust that guy.
No,
anybody
right.
who goes on television and makes an outrageous statement calling the President of the United States a traitor or treason, I mean, that's just outrageous. I mean, that is just – you can disagree with people all you want. But to me, calling for treason, I think, is pretty bizarre. So I would give this – I mean, I let the president decide. I don't think you want to take away this power from the president. But I would say to President Trump, scratch a lot of names off that list, because if you want to know who's been leaking, I think we know now.
Yeah, really. I mean,
the leakers are. I think we know who the leakers are.
And again, I mean, it's the – outrageousness of this of these leaks.
Not sure.
Being people trying to hide behind the First Amendment. I don't know.
I think the media is always. I mean, in these things, the media is always going to get away with it, because they're just getting. I mean, to me, the problem is the leaker, not the media. I mean, if you're a reporter and they give you a juicy story, well, you're going to go with it. But the problem here is, I think, the leaker. And you got to find that person and process them, however you can, because leaking, as I'm sure you know as well as a lot of our listeners know, is not just a crime, but it puts people's lives in jeopardy, because the information you're giving out could very well lead an enemy in a direction where they could find somebody that they could eventually execute for whatever reason for being. Working with the United States. We're going to take a little break, George, and when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about Texas. But right now, I want you to hear from my friend Carlos, who's doing a lot of playing around Dallas.
This is Carlos Guerrero Harpies. I would like to see you guys this Saturday night at Sissiki's at the Star, located at 6765 Winning Drive in Frisco. I'll be performing instrumental high-energy music at 6:30 until 9:30 p.m. Make your reservation today at 972-377-2276. Remember, Sissiki's at the Star is the place to hang out on Saturday night. For upcoming dates, Look for me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
And we have a link to all of that information right under the show description. You'll see a link to Carlo's website. Check on that. Click on that, and you'll be able to know where he's playing. He's playing just about everywhere in the Dallas area and doing a great job. And we love Carlos. We have a great relationship with him. He lets us use his music, and we promote his playing. I mean, just a wonderful friend, Carlos Guedes, from Venezuela. So I have a little sympathy with someone from Venezuela, you know, what they're going through right now. Let's get back to our friend George Rodriguez. George, talking about Texas, there's been a lot of publicity about the money that some Democrats are raising. Beto O'Rourke in particular. Although I have to be honest with you, I don't put a lot of stock on that. I don't deny that he's raising the money, but I don't think the money is coming from anybody who's going to vote in Texas. So that's why I tend to be a little skeptical of his money. But some of the other races are interesting. Here are some of the congressional races where the Democrats are doing a pretty good job of raising money, George.
Yeah, it's a very, very interesting situation. I was reading where apparently there are at least seven Democrats that have outraised their Republican opponents that are running for Congress. The Liz Fletcher, who's running against John Culberson, Joe Kopner, or Kopser, who's running against the open seat that Lamar Smith has vacated right here in my own backyard, who's running against Chip Roy, Gina Ortiz Jones, who's running against Congressman Will Hurd, the Republican. All of these folks have outraised their Republican counterparts, which is very, very interesting. You know, along with Beto O'Rourke, who's revealed that he's got the last report that I heard was 10.4 million. That he had raised against Ted Cruz. The question, again, though, is that while they're raising all this money, the money is coming from where? It's coming from out of state. And that's good and dandy, but I'm not sure how much of an impact it's going to have on the voters in the state who really, really are turned off by the rhetoric of the far left of the Democratic Party, and that these Democrat candidates are either trying to minimize or they are embracing. I mean, you know, they are. The Texas voters who are going to react to these guys. Really, I'm not sure how much all this money is going to do for them.
Right. Well, I have two theories. Well, not two theories, but two thoughts. In the case of Beto O'Rourke, I think a lot of that money is going to dry up September and October. And what I mean by that is that I think at some point people are going to realize he's not going to win. And they're just sending money to the wrong guy. Because if you really, I mean, if the Democrats really want to have a chance of picking up the Senate, they'd be a heck of a lot better off defending the seat in Ohio or Florida where they have a better chance of the money going somewhere. Whereas, I mean, in Texas, I have not seen a poll, at least anything recent, that shows O'Rourke, you know, let's say 45% or better in any poll. So that's why I think at some point, the mania, the Beto mania, is going to wear off, and we'll get back to reality with Beto. The other problem is, what are they going to do with this money in a congressional race? Are they going to run ads by Hollywood actors saying, you know, that Trump is this, or we should impeach Trump? I mean, the problem with this money is that it does come with strings attached.
Big strings.
And the strings is, you know, you got to put, I don't know, some Hollywood actor on your ad saying, hey, you know, vote for my candidate here in your district because he's going to impeach Trump. I don't know if that's going to work real well. Or vote for my candidate because he hates the NRA.
I don't think that flies here.
I just don't think
that flies here,
George.
You know, abolish ICE. I mean,
Yes, exactly.
How is that going to go? or embrace Planned Parenthood. I don't know.
Right.
I'm just not sure.
Or,
I'm just not sure
well, that's
you know, how they're going to play
it.
That.
Exactly. So you got all this money, and these people are not giving you money. I mean, look, they're giving you money.
The
but
money
they,
is one thing. Yeah, the
yeah,
money is one thing. What's your message?
That's it. But what's interesting, nobody's giving Ms. Valdez any money, though. That's the interesting part.
That's another story. Yes, that's another story. That's very, very, you know, Greg Abbott has $16 million,
mm-hmm.
and Lupe Valdez has had to reorganize her campaign. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen with that. I mean, she's she had to get rid of her campaign manager and find another one. And in the meantime, Greg Abbott just rolling along like a steamroller.
Right.
And I'll tell you that's going to be another issue that's going to be very, very difficult for the Democrats to overcome is that the popularity of the man at the top of the ticket is going to be very, very, very strong. I mean, the popularity of the two men at the top of the ticket, Greg Abbott and Ted Cruz, regardless of how, you know, I think the biggest issue that we may see here is how the mainstream media plays on the issue of promoting or supporting the Democrats' narrative. That
mm-hmm.
I think you know. I think like news organs like the Austin Statesman and here in San Antonio, the San Antonio Express, and you know the Dallas Morning News, how they are able to publicize the message, the spin, if you would, of the Democrats. I think that if they're going to get any kind of help, I think that might be where it's going to happen because, you know, all this money coming from Hollywood and from New York, it's not going to do you any good if the message is not something
right.
that our voters are responsive or receptive to.
Well, that's it. It's all about message, and if you're going to be running an anti-NRA message, if you're going to be running a pro or abolish ICE message, I mean, yeah, you'll get a lot of ads, but I'm not sure they're going to get you a lot of votes. As far as the news media, the three ones that you mentioned, I'm not sure how influential they are anymore, George. I'll be honest with
yeah.
you, because I get the Dallas Morning News every day, and the Dallas Morning News has become really, over the last couple of years, very much of an anti-Trump newspaper. And I just don't think that is connecting with people in the area. And so I that's simply not a sensible position to take, in my opinion, to be. I think for when a newspaper becomes pro or anti anybody, I think it loses a lot of credibility, in my opinion. One of the reasons that I used to like the Dallas Morning News really for a long time was that, yes, they would endorse Republicans for president, but they were also, you know, they were pretty serious in their coverage. I don't remember the kinds of headlines against Clinton or Obama or Bush or the first Bush or Reagan or even Carter. Any headlines like the ones that I'm seeing now against Trump, which are clearly anti-Trump. I mean, come on, it's really obvious. So I think that hurts their credibility, and I wouldn't be surprised if those three papers that we talked about have lost readership over the last couple of years, George.
Yeah, that's very, very, very true. Here in San Antonio, you've got the same thing with the San Antonio Express that has recently had to do some massive layoffs, as well as you know the subscribership has just gone down, and that's the same thing that other South Texas newspapers, Corpus Christi Caller, for example, have been facing, the McAllen Monitor. So you're right. I think that you know how limited that their influence is, or you know, I think is something that we need to look at.
Right.
This issue of all of this money that is being thrown around, or how much they have raised,
mm-hmm.
you know, patting themselves on the back for it. I think that'll I'm not sure that that's something that is really, really going to be helpful in the long run.
No, I agree with you, and we all remember Wendy Davis. I mean, she had no shortage of money. What she had was a shortage of votes, and she came down about 18 points below or under Abbott in the final count. But one thing you mentioned before, I just want to make this last point. You mentioned before about having a very popular guy on top of the ticket, and you're exactly right. Greg Abbott, Governor Abbott, is about as good as you want to have at the top of the ticket, particularly in a non-presidential year. And, you know, the last time around, I looked at the numbers. The last time around, Governor Abbott, or then, I guess he was Attorney General then, right, Abbott, when he ran, he got 2.9 million, almost 3 million votes in 2014. I predict that he will get at least that much, maybe a couple hundred thousand more, which means that the top of the ticket is going to bring about 3 million, 3 million 200,000 people to vote. That's got to help a lot of people underneath, George. And
yeah.
I don't see Lupe Valdez getting, I think she'd be lucky to get 1.5 million votes. So what I'm saying is that you're going to have a situation on Election Day where about 3 million, maybe 3,200,000 people are going to go vote Republican, and maybe 1.5 million, maybe 2 million are going to vote Democrat. I don't think that's you know, I'd rather be on the Republican side, George.
Yeah, I think you know, the spin that's being given. Again, you know, all campaigns have got to look at it very, very positively about, you know,
mm-hmm.
how much money we've raised and how, you know, how good our candidate is doing. Eventually, I think all of that is going to turn out to be bluff or fluff, should I say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the reality will set in and, you know, come November. You know, the day after the election, I think that there's going to be a lot of Democrats with some heavy hangovers from an election that that just didn't have the right message.
Exactly. No, I think you're exactly right, and I just think that, you know, as dollar bills don't vote. Now I want to say something though, because I'm sure I'll get an email from a Democrat, and I do from time to time, or a Twitter or something saying that I'm making fun, I'm not respecting the Democrats. Now, look, I respect the fact that they're getting a lot of money. All I'm simply saying is, as we learned with Wendy Davis, and even with Beto O'Rourke in the primary, you know, he spent a lot of money, but 40% of the vote didn't go his way. So money isn't always the way to win an election. As you say, you have to have a message, and you have to have the right message and the right in the right state or the right county or the right city or whatever. Well, George, as always, thank you for your time. Thank you for joining us, and thank you for giving us a brief on San Antonio weather. And I guess we're both in triple digits today. So
yeah, well, let's keep our pulse on what's happening in the Texas elections, because you know,
we sure?
I think that we have to. You know, we just have to encourage everybody that they have
right.
to they have to go to the polls. I mean, you know, what we
I
can't
agree.
Have is 10%, 14% showing up at the polls. We've got to, you know, people have got to take it serious.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you. It's got to be you know, this has got to be an election we give it all out, because it means a lot to
it
the country and to the state. I mean, this you know, we say that a lot about. This is the most important election. Well, this is a pretty important one. I'll just put it that way. This is,
it really is.
A very important. George, have a great day. And
you
thank
too.
You for your time.
Stay cool.
All
bye
right.
bye.
Thank you very much. George Rodriguez, our good friend down in South Texas. I think George has the right idea there at the end. You know, we got to keep Republicans have to stay focused here and have to understand that, you know, you don't stay home November. You go out and vote. And I don't care what the polls are saying, you go out and vote. I'm pretty confident that they will, to be honest with you. I'm pretty confident that they will. And I think there's going to be a very good Republican turnout in November. And as I said, I think Mr. Abbott, Governor Abbott himself, will probably get over 3 million votes come November. Thank you for listening, folks. Have a wonderful day from very warm North Texas, 100 degrees. My gosh, it's summer. What do you expect here in Texas? Bye-bye, everybody.